Okay, we're going to call the Senate Education Committee meeting to order. Today is Friday, February 10th. Time is 8 o'clock. In attendance, we have Co-Chair Thomas, Vice Chair Davis, Senator French, Senator Stevens, I believe is on his way, and then myself, Co-Chair Meyer. So we do, Senator Stevens is here. Welcome, Senator Stevens. So we do have a full committee here today. We have several topics to take up. The first thing we're going to take up is the Senate Concurrent Resolution 21, which makes the Education Committee in both bodies permanent. We will then hear a presentation by Charles Woolforth on the terms of the Moore case settlement. The administration is here as well and available for any questions that we may have after the presentation by Mr. Woolforth. Mr. Woolforth will stay with us as well. Unfortunately, he wasn't able to get here to Juneau. He's online. Also on today's schedule is Senate Bill 170, which requires vocational education counseling in public schools. However, we will not take that up today. We won't have time. I believe we're taking that up on Monday now. Is that the plan? Okay. So if anybody wanted to testify or was hoping to testify on that today, please accept our apologies and back on Monday. So we'll get on PR 21, which changes the uniform rules to allow for the continued and permanent existence of the Senate and House Education Committees. Committee members should have the bill and the backup information in the packets. And then I'll ask Edra, my staff, to present the bill to us. So Edra, welcome.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Senate Concurrent Resolution 21 is a pretty straightforward piece of legislation. Basically, what it does is it makes the Senate and the House Standing Education Committees permanent in both bodies. And it does this by repealing two sections of the Uniform Rule 20 that served as a sunset clause. For a little history, back in 2008, the legislature changed the uniform rules to create standalone committees in both bodies. That legislation, which is legislation resolve number 35, is in your packet for reference, as is a copy of the rules if you care to review them. Prior to 2008, education was under the purview of the merged health, education, and social services committees in both bodies. And at the time, due to the unknown logistics of maintaining a new standing committee, a five-year sunset provision was added. Without this legislation, SCR 21, jurisdiction over education would revert back to the merged committees in both houses. And that would occur on January 15th, 2013. So after polling members of this committee, and I believe the House did the same, it was determined to be in the best interest of diligent policymaking to continue the standing education committees on a permanent basis. There's a zero fiscal note attached from the Legislative Affairs Agency, and with that, that concludes my presentation. If I can answer any questions, if you'd like.
Okay, very good. Senator Stevens.
Well, it's just sort of surprised me as I was talking to other states that we seem to be about the only state in the union that did not have a standing education committee, and it just made sense, and I think... you know, there's so many issues that this committee has been particularly successful in dealing with, concentrating on those education issues, which really has health social services has a full plate in any event. So I think it's worked out perfectly, and really support this bill.
Very good. Thank you, Senator Stevens. And we do have the House chairman here as well. I don't know if Senator Davis wants to comment, but I would agree. I think separate education from health is put emphasis on educational issues, and we've been able to put them a little bit better and more depth. And I think the only trouble we've had in the last 5 years is just finding time during the day to have the committee meeting. And so, unfortunately, we have to meet at 8 o'clock in the morning, but we got everybody here, so it seems to be working. And I think that we have accomplished a lot as a committee. Is there any other?
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Senator Davis.
Thank you. I'm glad that we're going to make this a permanent committee. I came down to the legislature in 1991 for the first time on the House side, and that was one of the goals that I wanted to achieve, was to have a single education committee. It took some time for it to happen. I'm glad now it's permanent. It's going to be in the uniform rules, and it's there. Because most all states do have a education committee. It's just too important to be stuck in there with health and social services, and that's one of our biggest departments, and have education squeezed in the middle of that. And I appreciate all the work that we've been able to do since we had a single committee. And I'm glad to be here to say that I've stayed long enough to see it happen and make it permanent.
Great. Thanks, Senator Davis. Any other comments? I don't believe we have anyone to testify on that, correct? Okay. All right. Then, if there's no other questions, comments concerning this particular resolution, Senator Thomas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that Senate Concurrent Resolution Number 21 be moved from committee with individual recommendations and the attached to zero fiscal note.
Okay. Any objections? Seeing here none, then that passes. Edra, thank you very much. Okay. We'll sign the book, and while everyone is signing the book, we'll go on to our next piece of action, which is to hear from Charles Wolforth. Charles Wolforth is the executive director of SEAC, which is the Citizens for Educational Advancement of Alaska's Children. And we do have Commissioner Hanley here as well, and Neil Slotnick with the Attorney General's Office. As I mentioned earlier, they're here to answer any questions, and hopefully we'll even have some time for comments if you have any, Commissioner Hanley. Okay. So with that, I think we have no. Okay, we don't have Mr. Wolforth online. Okay, let's take a brief at ease. Okay, we're going to bring the Education Committee back to order. Mr. Wolforth, is that you there? Heard say hello?
Yes.
All right. Well, welcome to the Senate Education Committee meeting, Mr. Wolforth. It's good to hear your voice again. We just to let the audience know, Charles Wolforth and I served together on the Anchorage Assembly back in the 1990s. So good to hear your voice. A lot of good work here on this with the SEAC Group, Citizens for Educational Advancement of Alaska's Children. And at this time, I think I know you and I haven't spoken, but you're prepared to talk about the Moore case and the settlement. Is that correct?
Yes, thank you. Okay. I'm ready.
Okay. Well, the floor is yours, Mr. Wolforth.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Senator Meyer, and thank you to the committee for allowing me to come in by phone. I had a prior engagement planned that I couldn't be in Juneau today, so I appreciate being able to talk to you this way.
Sure.
I have a one-page summary that I asked to have distributed because the settlement itself is pretty long and detailed. something like 25 pages long, and so I tried to boil it down to just some of the essence of it in the summary. And so this morning I'm just going to take a few minutes to go through the point, point by point from the summary that, that I sent down to you.
Do we have that, Mr.
Charles? Let's, Charles, just a second. We want to make sure all committee members have it. We're passing the summary out right now. Okay. Yeah, we all have the summary.
Okay, excellent. So to begin with, CEAC is Citizens for the Educational Advancement of Alaska's Children. We're a nonprofit corporation. We've been around since the mid-90s. I'm a part-time executive director. I've been in the job for 1 year. We have 22 members. 21 of those members are rural Alaska school districts, plus our 22nd member is the Anchor School District. And we have a five-member executive board. The president of our board is Norm Eck, who is the superintendent of the Northwest Arctic Borough School District. The vice president is Carrie Boyd, who's the superintendent of the Yukon Koyukuk School District. Our secretary treasurer is Joe Beckford of the Aleutian Region School District. Then we have two at-large members on our executive board, Carol Como of the Anchor School District and Todd Pogue of the Alaska Gateway School District, which is based in Tok. So we kind of cover the whole state. The Moore case began in 2004, and it's a case that is similar to cases that have been brought in other states around the country that have a constitutional guarantee of public education. There have been cases in 42 states. The majority of them have been successful from the plaintiff's point of view in trying to compel their states in whatever form to observe their constitutional obligation for public schools. The first big ruling in the case came in 2007. Judge Sarah Gleason had to essentially define what the constitutional obligation means. In the Constitution, of course, it's pretty vaguely worded, just saying we'll have a system of public schools. She identified what that means, what right that gives to students in terms of the schools that they're going to be able to attend. And she found that the state was meeting the obligation in three out of four parts of what it meant, but it was failing in terms of the lowest, the chronically underperforming schools. And these are schools that we can identify because we can look at the state standards, we can look at the standard-based assessments, and we can see that they're year after year have extremely low achievement and a large number of students are not achieving proficiency in the standards. At that time, in 2007, the case kind of split. Some of the plaintiffs who had been going after it on the broader issues dropped out, and SEAC and a couple of districts continued along in pushing towards compliance with Judge Gleason's order regarding the underperforming schools. And there were two subsequent orders in 2009 and 2010 when the judge laid out exactly what would be required for compliance and then said that the state was not meeting those items. And those phases were based on expert testimony from educational experts from around the country who talked about root causes of low educational attainment and solutions that you could put in place to, you know, to meet those causes. As we settled the case last month on the 26th, we've tried to put together a settlement that would pretty closely match what the judge had identified as the root causes and solutions that would meet those causes. And we haven't dealt with every single one of the judge's points, but we've tried to follow her rulings as closely as possible. The settlement discussions began last spring. I began approaching the Commissioner Hanley and Governor Parnell about our desire to settle February, March last year, and SEAC developed a detailed settlement proposal in March. There had been settlement discussions that had gone on previously that had not been successful. We decided to come into the settlement with a pretty clear and detailed program that we thought would be something that would be practical, could be implemented, would be within the state's budgets to attain, and it would deal with Judge Gleason's point. through the course of the discussions, and I want to say here that, you know, none of this would have happened without Commissioner Mike Hanley and his amazing ability to work with us and his amazing commitment to kids and just the desire to come up with something that would be meaningful. He was a tremendous negotiating partner, as was John Burns, the Attorney General, former Attorney General, of course. And we went through many, many, many sessions, but it was extraordinarily long negotiation and time-consuming because it's so complex. But essentially, we came up with four programs and a lump sum appropriation that would fund those programs for what we anticipate to be 3 years. The belief of the state and of Commissioner Hanley and of ourselves is that these programs can be implemented without additional legislation being passed for this three-year period. Though to continue them beyond the three-year period, presumably there would be need to be legislation. The money will be allocated, and this is a critical portion of the settlement, by the MORE Collaborative Committee. The idea is that we can be most effective if we're working on these problems with the shared partnership of the Rural School District and of the Department of Education. So the committee is going to have seven members. Three will be appointed by SEAC, three appointed by Commissioner Hanley, and then there'll be a seventh non-voting member to act as chair. And the idea is that the committee will be educational experts who know about rural Alaska, and they will be essentially allocating the funds in the settlement. They'll be designing the programs to make sure they work for local areas. In order to avoid conflict of interest, we're going to have an independent contractor who will actually score the grant and evaluate the grant. And then after the $18 million is gone, then it all goes away unless there's some further action by the state to continue. Hopefully by the time we're done with this, we'll approve that there's really an effective set of programs and you'll want to keep them. So the four programs, the centerpiece is the two-year kindergarten and related programs. The research shows that in these schools that are underperforming in Alaska and elsewhere, one of the primary causes is that children arrive at kindergarten a year or 2 years behind their peers in more successful schools. And once that happens, any school would struggle because, essentially, to get that kid ready to read by grade three, they need to make two additional years of progress compared to a kid in a more successful school. So that rural school now has a task that's much more difficult. So the settlement gives these rural schools the opportunity to get the kids into school as four-year-olds. So when they get to kindergarten, they're ready and they have the basic skills such as knowing their colors, knowing some letters in the alphabet, ability to write their name, and the other things that kindergarten teachers expect and look for in kids who are beginning kindergarten. We're focusing this on the four schools with the lowest performance, the 40 lowest schools, which is determined by a growth factor, which is a formula based on standard-based assessment scores and an average of the previous 3 years so that we can get something that doesn't change too much from year to year. And the communities where the program is implemented will have to show support through resolutions of local community organizations and by parents signing letters of intent saying that they're going to use the program. The next program is the Targeted Resource Grant. These will be grants focused on those 40 schools where they can get additional financial resources to implement research-proven programs and strategies that will help them improve achievement. And we define in the settlement somewhat what those are, but we also left it open-ended so that schools can identify their own problems and their own solutions. And then there's a significant matching component on this so that local communities will have to contribute their own funds to get these grant funds. The idea being that it's not free money, it's something that they really believe in, they have skin in the game. The next program is the Teacher Retention Grant Program. This one is not restricted to the 40 lowest schools. It's available to any school in Alaska, urban or rural, that has high turnover with teachers and low test scores. And schools will be able to apply for grants on a competitive basis for programs that are going to help them deal with their teacher turnover problem. We know that teacher retention is one of the most important root causes of low achievement. And it's something that is kind of a threshold problem because you can spend a lot of money on staff development and on other things to solve your problems, but if the teacher that you've been training then leaves at the end of the year, all of that's lost. So you need teachers to stay, and you need them to develop in their effectiveness, as we know that teachers reach an average level of effectiveness only after 3 years on the job. So it's a very critical part. We designed this program using the research that's been put out by ICER, looking at causes of teacher turnover in rural Alaska. There are a number of causes identified, and as Commissioner Hanley pointed out, salary was not at the top of the list. It was on the list, but it was many other causes that were perhaps as important or more important. So these grant funds are for dealing with problems other than compensation. And they range from dealing with housing problems, trying to deal with community relations issues, with discipline, with the ability of the person to fit into the community culturally. So a variety of opportunities for districts to help their teachers stay. The final one is the high school graduation qualifying exam remediation reimbursement program. One of the things that Judge Gleason identified was that we were giving kids a high-stakes graduation exam, and in some of these schools we were never giving them the material that was on the exam. And she said that that was manifestly unfair, and I think most people would agree that it was. So those students who can't pass the exam and who have been students at one of these 40 chronically underperforming schools should receive remedial support, and under this program, the settlement would pay $3,000 per student to pay for that remedial support. Kind of time is of the essence in this, so the idea is that as soon as the kids fail the exam in junior year, the school can start giving the remedial support, and then they can just apply for reimbursement. This is a program that is applicable to all the schools in the state, so there's a significant issue with students who are struggling and migrating into Anchorage and other urban centers, and the money essentially follows the kid. The idea is that it's a fairness issue for the students, and so whatever district he ends up with will be able to apply for that money for remediation. So those are the four programs, and there's some other important aspects of the settlement. We are obviously dismissing the litigation, assuming the money is appropriated, the Moore case will go away. We're not asking for legal expenses, which we believe we would probably receive from a judge and are in the neighborhood of $750,000. So for a small organization like us, that's a significant concession. The districts are agreeing to some accountability measures in order to access the funds, including assuring that the curriculum that the state is supporting is actually being taught, setting goals for superintendents and measuring for those goals, and a number of assessment measures to keep track of how they're doing. There's new attendance requirements for students using the settlement funds. The kids getting the remediation for the HSGQE have to meet an attendance standard, and the kids in the new two-year kindergarten also have to meet an attendance standard, or that money goes away. From the state side, there's an agreement that the $18 million appropriation is going to be new money. In other words, there are not going to be programs that are canceled or funding that's taken away in offset of the $18 million appropriation. And then there is an agreement that we will not advocate for sweeteners for the settlement or increases in the appropriation or legislation during the 2012 session. And there's much more in the settlement, but I think that covers the highlights. And I would welcome any questions or feedback or discussion from the committee. And thank you for having me this morning.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Woolforth. Appreciate that summary. Appreciate all your time and effort to get this resolved. And Commissioner Hanley is here as well. And we do appreciate Commissioner Hanley all your effort reaching a resolution to this, and we will allow for you some time as well, Mr. Hanley, to comment on this settlement. But let's first see if there's any questions on the committee, Senator Thomas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and certainly we appreciate all your effort, Mr. Wolfert. And I was just wondering if you believe that we actually have most of the programs in place in one school district or another, that this is going to be relatively, I wouldn't call it simple, but that we do have what we need in place, or do you expect to put in place programs that might stem from the pre-K program, the pilot program that we have been running the last couple of years, I believe it is, or what is your take on how we get this implemented as quickly as possible?
Well, there's no question we have a good experience based on doing a lot of this stuff around the state, and the pilot program is an example. And I think our philosophy is that we do not want to reinvent the wheel. We want to pick up things that have been done successfully in different school districts, and we want to access the superintendents and the other personnel who know how to make those things work and make sure that we write those into these programs. There are some differences in that looking at the two-year kindergarten, we're looking at a program with a high level of accountability and a high level of I'm just looking for the right word. It needs to be a very quality program with standards and with certified instructors. We don't want to take any chances on a program that's not going to be effective. And with the other programs, I think the commissioner would agree with me that there's a real emphasis on quality here and on making sure that we're doing things at the best practices level that's been found in Alaska and throughout the country. So as we go forward and design the details, as the collaborative committee designs the details, I think that's part of that is going to be our watchword in terms of looking to the absolute highest quality so we can get effectiveness. And I think we welcome innovative ideas and certainly welcome districts adapting ideas to their local areas. But there's always with that watchword of quality and keeping not just handing money out, but making sure that we're doing something that's going to be effective, that we can just one shot at it. The design is going to be a challenging aspect of we want to make this with as little administrative overhead as possible for the districts. One of the problems with past improvement initiatives in school districts is that it's very difficult for small districts to access grant funds because they don't have the administrative personnel to do complex grant applications and grant tracking and everything else. And so I talked to superintendents, you know, who have serious problems, and I said, well, here's a grant program you can access. And they said, well, when am I going to do that? You know, I just don't have the people in the office to put together a complex grant application. So we're actually going to try to write pre-written grant applications through the committee that have research-based programs that we know will be effective, and then the district can essentially just fill in their statistics, you know, their test scores and name and address, and file it with minimal effort. And coming up with those with those grant templates, if you will, is going to be a significant amount of effort for our committee to do, but I think it'll pay off because it'll be a quality thing, and it'll also be something that means that we get more bang for the buck because the districts aren't putting a lot of effort into writing grants. So those are going to be big jobs, and we want to do them fast, but we want to make sure we do them right. And if that means that we can't implement the two-year kindergarten in the 2012-13 school year, then, you know, so be it. We are prepared to let that slide back. I think the other programs, we can, I'm pretty confident we can implement in 2012-13, but setting up these new two-year kindergartens may take a little bit longer.
Very good. And just briefly, do you anticipate spending some time with the University of Alaska on their teacher preparedness or their teacher education program to kind of maybe be helpful in giving them some insights to what maybe they should put into their program to make sure that we are able to get teachers either back to the rural areas or into the rural areas with an understanding of what they may expect when they move there so that kind of has an impact on the retention?
Yeah, that was one of the major things that we had sought, actually, as coming into the negotiations, was to work on teacher quality and quantity from the university system. What the teachers that were turning out, that they're ready to teach in these districts and that they want to be there and that they're going to stay. Commissioner Hanley and former Attorney General Burns pointed out that they weren't really negotiating for the region, although I think Commissioner Hanley probably feels very much the same way we do, that this is a major issue that needs to be addressed. We're only training 30% of the teachers that we need in Alaska, so 70% of the teachers that districts are hiring are coming from outside Alaska. And if you go to the rural schools that have the most difficulty in terms of low performance, not surprisingly, they also have the most difficulty in teacher recruitment. And likely as not, they're recruiting teachers who are coming from other states, you know, in economically depressed areas where there are brand new teachers who can't find a job, you know, and here's somebody with a job in some village in Alaska, and off they go. And so they hit the village and really know almost nothing about the culture. And one can only imagine what the culture shock is like for someone from, you know, Lansing, Michigan or something who just come out of teacher college and is suddenly faced with this very challenging educational setting. So we would like to see the university substantially increase the number of teachers who are being trained through the colleges of education. Just as a goal, I'd like to see them doubled. And that's a project that is outside the settlement, but you're going to be hearing from us talking about it. Hopefully the legislature and the region administration and the districts can work together to make something like that happen over the coming years. And then also to make sure that when teachers come out, they are trained in the skills and backgrounds that the schools need. And there needs to be an information channel that's going from the districts to the university to define what that product is needed from the education department, in the university to the school so that those teachers are ready. One thing we can do through the Moore settlement has been done pretty effectively is use the grant funds that are available here to do culture camps for orienting teachers to local communities. That's been done in several districts around the state where new teachers will come during the summer, spend time in the district, get to know the community, maybe get a mentor in the local community, learn the culture, learn sort of how to live there before they're thrown into school in fall. And you know, if they decide they hate it, then they can decide not to come rather than quitting partway through the year. But if they get oriented a little bit, maybe when they get there in the fall, they're going to be a lot more successful because they're going to understand their students a bit more and understand what it's like to live in that community. So that's something the Moore settlement is intended to provide for.
Good. We appreciate your opinions on that and thoughts on that because we did get the reports the other day from the Post-Secondary Education Commission and the university as well over the last few days. And so we're aware of those statistics and just glad to see that everybody's kind of on the same page. So thank you.
Senator Stevens.
Thank you. Just so for perspective, could we get an estimate on the number of students we're talking about in the 40 lowest performing schools?
You know, I have had that number, but I don't have it in front of me. I think it's on the order of 4,000 students. The commissioner may know that better than I do.
Thank you. That's helpful.
Okay. Well, we'll ask the commissioner that as well. Senator Davis, did you have a question?
Question, comment, yes. Thanks, Mr. Chairman. Thanks for your report and the work that you've done on the settlement. Just glad to see that it's settled. But let's go back and talk about that. You got $18 million somewhere in a pot of money. Who will administer that money? Will you go back and repeat that to me? The $18 million?
The $18 million will be sort of allocated by the MORE Collaborative Committee, which is this committee of
And that's seven. That's the seven people that will be in charge of that?
Right. And there will be, there's a provision that I guess the under law or under the Constitution, the state can't entirely delegate. So there's a provision there that if there's something untoward that it can be overruled. But that's the idea, is the MORE Collaborative Committee will determine how the money is spent among the four programs.
So then that would be involvement of these 21 schools, well, 22 schools, 22 rural schools in Anchorage School District would have some say in some of the decisions that's being made then. Because as they talked about the Moore case, it was always said that they felt that they were not being listened to in the rural areas, that they didn't get honored on things that they wanted. They wanted to be at the table to have said it. They will. How will you choose these people that's going to serve on that committee? You said three will be appointed by your group, SEAC, right?
Yes. I'm going to be sitting down with our executive board at the end of the month to determine who will be our representatives. And our expectation is that our representatives are going to represent our organization and our interests. Mm-hmm. And we intend to be very closely involved in the work of this committee. So I think that it will definitely represent the views of these rural school districts.
And the other four members would be appointed by the commissioner?
There are three members appointed by the commissioner, and then the chair is a non-voting chair who will be appointed by a mutual agreement of myself and the commissioner.
All right. Okay. And what would be the qualification for those coming from the that would be appointed by the commissioner? How would they be decided? I guess I could ask him that when he comes up. You don't have to answer that.
You don't have to answer that. There's no requirement, so it can be whoever chooses.
Okay. All right, and there's another thing here. He says that there's going to be, I don't need to ask you these questions. We need to wait for the commissioner to come up because those are things that he's going to have to address. Thanks for your report, and thanks for the work that you've done.
Okay, thank you, Senator.
Senator
Davis. Senator French, question, comment?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yeah, I do. I just have one or two questions for Mr. Woolforth, and it may be that, like Senator Davis, my questions are better directed to the commissioner, but I thought I'd give him a chance to weigh in. I want to zero in, if we could, just for a minute on the two-year kindergarten aspect of the settlement. And it looks to me like there has been an agreement that at least $6 million will go to the two-year kindergarten. I'm looking at the settlement agreement on page 4 of 22. That's your understanding, Mr. Woolforth?
Yes.
Great. And that's spread out over 3 years?
Three years and potentially up to 40 schools, right?
Up to 40 schools, right. And so that's $2 million a year, which is the same amount we've been spending on pilot pre-K program, and there's a provision, a very wise provision, in the settlement that says you can't zero out other funds to make room for this $18 million. But did you specifically sort of talk about the $2 million pre-K program versus this new $2 million two-year kindergarten and how they might work together?
Yeah, we felt very strongly that the pilot program should continue, and that If the pilot program were to be discontinued and this program started, we wouldn't have made the progress that we want to see. I personally think it makes sense for the for this program and the pilot program to begin to dovetail and use some of the same standards, because it obviously makes more sense to have one kind of program covering more schools. But the expectation that the schools that are getting the pilot program funding now will not lose it is one that I'm certainly working on. This program, I think, is a little bit different in some aspects in terms of the training requirements for the instructors, and we're looking for teachers who are trained to a fairly high level, and some of the community buy-in and those items. But as I understand it, the pilot program has shown pretty remarkable success, and it's a really good basis for continuing and expanding into this program in terms of, you know, we know this works now, and it really is going to be effective to bring it to these 40 additional schools.
Thank you. And just last question. We are serving about 345 kids through the pilot pre-K program. did you arrive at any number of kids who you thought might be served through the two-year kindergarten?
We haven't gone through and counted them up. That's something that we obviously need to do. We decided to take an approach that was based on Judge Gleason's orders to identify statistically identify the lowest performing schools, and we began with a formula looking at those schools that were not achieving 50% proficiency in reading or math and were achieving a growth score under 85, and that gave us somewhere between 36 and 38 schools, and we rounded off to 40, and the exact schools that came in under that limit were arrived at statistically. They weren't sort of cherry-picked to count up how many kids there would be in each one. And then the amount of funding that's available is based on the formula. It's essentially 0.75 of a full-time student for each of these two-year kindergarten students, which is based on the concept that we're not necessarily expecting it to be a full-day program. You know, at a four-year-old level, a part-day program is probably more appropriate. So the funding that was arrived at was essentially calculated by the department, that they believe that looking at this number of schools, we don't know how many of the schools, it's possible that not all of the communities will adopt it. They may have programs in place that they prefer to keep, or they may prefer to use the funding outside of a school building to enhance an existing program. This seemed like an amount of money that would work. But the flexibility that's built in here is designed to allow us to allocate more of the settlement, $18 million, towards the two-year kindergarten if it proves that we, you know, we've miscalculated.
Great comments, and I'll have a couple questions for the commissioner when he gets in front of us, but thank you, Mr. Wolforth.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Wolforth, for joining us this morning. You're welcome to stay online at this time, though. We do want to hear from the Commissioner Hanley, and but again, thank you for all your hard work, Mr. Wolforth.
Thank you for the opportunity. It's a pleasure to speak with you this morning, and I will stay on the line.
Okay, great. Good morning, Commissioner Hanley. Welcome to
the
Education Committee.
Thank you. For the record, I'm Commissioner Hanley. Mike Hanley, Commissioner for the Department of Education and Early Development. And I surely don't look at this as a point-counterpoint, because Charles and I have worked very well together, and I really do look forward to continuing to work together. And I don't think the primary focus of the settlement is $18 million. I think it's what that $18 million will do for, one, for kids through accountability measures, and two, for in some healing measures into working together with our rural districts in the collaboration that we anticipate having through the more collaborative committee. So, yes, $18 million is a significant amount, but we anticipate that won't be the primary effect in these districts. I don't have anything that I would contradict. I think what Charles spoke to was correct, and it'd probably be more efficient time-wise to answer questions you may have. I surely could delve into areas, but I think I'll let you take the lead.
Well, thank you, Commissioner Hanley. And I know we do have some questions. I just want to take just a minute, though. Thank you as well for all your hard work, as well as Neil's in pursuing this and reaching a resolution that seems to be very good. So let's see. I know Senator French, you had a question, and maybe Senator Stevens. Senator Stevens was fairly quick, so I think yours was a question on how many students this
impacts. Oh, yes. Commissioner, if you could tell us, we heard the figure of 4,000 students, approximately 4,000 students. So.
Through the chair, that's correct. We didn't have that number at the press conference. I think we came up with 45. I'll have to look again. 45, 33, or it was about 4,500
right.
students.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, very good. And then, Senator Davis, I know you have some, too, but let me go to Senator French.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And back on the two-year kindergarten, was my sort of understanding of the structure, the continuing structure of both the pilot pre-K and the two-year new program correct? That is, they're both going to continue the way they have in the past. One's going to continue and one's going to begin anew.
Through the chair, that's correct. That's our intention. That's Charles' intention. Specifically, we could probably speak to there's $300,000 directly allocated as part of our pre-K program. It's allocated to two intervention districts who both have schools in this. So we would surely advocate at this point that $300,000 does not get removed and, you know, this replace it. That's not the intent of the settlement. So that's correct.
And just one other question, and as much as, you know, we all see this as a positive step forward, I'm going to guess that we're still going to serve a very, very small fraction of the kids who need the help. You know, there's 40 schools out there low performing. We're going to get, you know, we've got 350 kids in the pilot pre-K program. I can't see how we get many more than that out of this money, this $2 million. So that's 700 kids. What ideas can you bring us for working with the other thousands of young Alaskans who need this kind of education?
Through the chair, I honestly hope that this is a program that we can scale, but that we can definitely get the insight from and the data from to say what is working. And we do have some of that data from our first 2 years of our pre-K program now. We anticipate that this will add additional data to the programs that are used.
And just, and sure. I'm glad you brought that up because I still have my well-thumbed copy of last year's results of the pilot pre-K program. Those results came out January 3rd. Have the second year's results been released? Maybe you've seen them, but I just don't know if we've seen them. You know, the year two evaluation of the pilot pre-K program.
I have seen that report. I'm just going to look to Marcy to see it. Has that been officially? So we can surely get that to you.
Okay. Yeah. Please. Yep. Yeah, it's a great document, and it's. A source of hope for me, and I know it is for you as well. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Senator French. Senator Davis.
Thank you. I sort of continuing the light that he was going on the pilot program. It tell me exactly what's in the budget for. I thought the pilot program has been around for like 3 years now, right?
This is our third year.
This is your third year. How much money do we have in it for the pilot? Is there a pilot program for this year?
We have. Of the $2 million, through the chair, of the $2 million that we have in our pre-K program, we have $1 million that is in the base. We have $300,000 that is also in the base that is directed specifically to two districts, two intervention districts. And we have $700,000 that is one-time funding.
And it hasn't been decided what those two districts are going to be?
No, those were directed to the UP school district and the Lower Yukon District.
But it will be in that, okay.
Yes.
But there really is not a pilot program then. You've got those different pots of money going in other areas rather than putting it out for grants for schools to have a pre-K program again.
Through the chair, we did originally call it a pilot, and that was the goal, keep everything consistent so you can have consistent data, compare apples to apples. At this point, we will have that data, and we're looking, especially if we can continue to get this $700,000, to say, okay, how can we, hopefully these programs have built some capacity. Is there a way that we can reduce some of the funding, still support them, and start to spread the wealth with these programs that have proven to be effective into other school districts?
Okay, thank you.
Not directly connected to the Moore, but statewide program, yes.
A couple of things. Down here on the other obligations, and this were more or less what the DED is agreeing to, you says down here that you were new attendance requirement would be required. What are those new attendance requirements that's going to be required?
In the settlement, you will see that, especially when we're looking at the conversation that came about in two primary ways, and the first one was in regards to the two-year kindergarten. We know that it'll be a voluntary program, and so, but there needs to be a recognition by the community, it's kind of that skin in the game, that if districts have chosen to put this in place, allocate space, resources, and time to this program, that parents sign an agreement that their students will be there 85% of the time. And so that we don't have a program set up with teachers and space and no one showing up. Part of the issue becomes if a two-year program comes into place, and that's why there is a pre-literacy option, if they want to strengthen what they already have, districts very well may need to look at a program and say, well, gee, if we have our four-year-olds go to a two-year kindergarten program, we'll take them out of the current program that we have in place. That may gut that program. We probably can't support both. So we may have to choose one or the other because they're funded by student. And so if this program over here, it could be a head start. It could be a different type of a model. But if they've got their four-year-olds and all the four-year-olds go over here, there's no one left. So the districts have that choice of making that decision of what is going to be the best model for them to choose and how to incorporate that.
Also, I would like to know how you plan to utilize the money that you're going to have for training for the students that fail the qualifying exam.
Yeah, through the chair, that will be a decision made by districts, and it'll be on a reimbursement type model. There is one that I think was probably thrown out as the reason that we have the $3,000, and I could be wrong. We haven't specified how that could be done. It could be done a myriad of ways, but one way is there's a CHUGECH model, the Voyage to Excellence model, that is based out of Anchorage. They do a summer camp, a 30-day camp for students to help them gain those skills for the HSGQE as well as job hunting skills and things like that. Districts could choose to use the funding to send kids into that. They could do something in-house. They could do Saturday schools. They could do whatever they wanted, but that's a reimbursement and a choice made by districts, not by the department.
All right, thank you.
Okay, Senator Thomas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you for your comments, Commissioner. And I hope that we will seek out existing programs and things that have been successful. That appears to be what people are looking at doing. And because we're going to be evaluating things, don't want to start over with some kind of new process to try and evaluate whether something's effective or not. So particularly in the grant area, and I know there might be some concerns, because I know in some areas there are concerns over just what even is the curriculum in some areas. So hopefully we'll use, as I believe it references in the decision, not only research-based, but things that have been effective in similar circumstances. So, and I see you nodding your head, and I think that's good. So we're all on the same page there. I'd hate to see us spending money in areas and then it being just more either pilot programs or potentially new aspects imported from someplace outside or something. So not necessarily a question unless you care to comment on that aspect of it, particularly in relationship to the research-based programs and the grants.
Just briefly through the chair, one of the aspects of especially the targeted resources grants that will go to these new ideas or proven ideas is that 10% of those funds will go to research the efficacy of those programs. So that'll be set aside. We'll put out an RFP, could be an ICER, could be a university, could be a research program, so that we have that pre-data, we have that post-data, and we really do show results at the end of this.
Thank you.
Okay. Very good. Thank you, Senator Thomas. And I know you may need to run off to finance, so feel free to leave, and we'll continue with the questions here. Commissioner, you got a few more minutes. Senator Stevens.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, I appreciate your presentation on the Moore settlement, but there are some really troubling implications here of funding the education statewide by court order. I mean, it does worry you where this is going.
it worries me where this is going, as I'm not sure what our revenue is going to be as we go into the future here. This kind of get out of my mind a play I saw years ago called the 101st. The 100 neediest families in New York received lots of money to help them. The 101st didn't receive anything, and it's about the unfairness of it. So what if you're the 41st, principal of the 41st school to need help? You know, I can see that this is something we need to do. I mean, all of these are important issues for every student in Alaska. I don't think we can afford $18 million for every 4,000 block of students. I guess I'm just troubled by it, Commissioner. Do you have any reflections on that the implications for the future? I mean, are the parents of the 41st school now going to say sue us and demand something similar?
Through the chair, it's a good question. It's one that we've wrestled with. As I've looked over the piles and piles of court orders from Judge Gleason in the Superior Court, her comments in regards to identifying those four areas of our responsibilities, our constitutional responsibilities, and the fourth one that we didn't meet was the oversight, accountability, support portion. She recognized that in a state that has local control, there needs to be oversight, because she said that in most places it works fine. In almost all districts it works fine, but in those places it doesn't. In places where there's either an unwillingness or an inability for districts to meet those needs of the kids, we need to step in. So this is a wake-up call for us as a state, for us as a department. This is to help remedy those constitutional deficits. Honestly speaking, I think that we are reaching out beyond the places that would be identified as constitutionally deficit. I think if we want to narrow it down, we'd find a much smaller list. But that would make it even more erroneous to draw a line somewhere. So I think in this case, we've expanded to 40. That's with, you know, a lot of input from Charles, and I really allowed them. We helped identify lowest performing 100, you know, and I really allowed plaintiffs to try to determine where that line would be, because at some point you need to draw it somewhere. So on one side, I think we've gone beyond what we actually have to, you know, to meet those responsibilities. The other side is that, you know, can we do more? Sure. But you're right. It's an erroneous model to try to fund education by court order. And I'm hoping that this funding is not the issue, but the collaboration that we developed from here. We become more receptive. We're not quite as reactive. We're a little bit more proactive in our responsibilities as a state and as a department, and we won't see this, but I'd like to guarantee you that, but I can't.
Thank you, Commissioner.
Okay. Very good. I just one quick question, Commissioner. Have you formulated any ideas or qualifications in your mind for the candidates to serve on this committee, which I believe you get to pick three, and the SEAC picks three, and then you mutually agree on the chairman. Is that correct?
That's correct, and we don't have anything in the settlement that determines qualifications. The things that I'm looking at, and that Charlie, I don't think he referenced, but we really want this committee to be a consensus type of committee, a committee that doesn't, you know, cast secret votes and say, oh, we win 4-2, but it is a consensus building team. So the qualifications that I'm looking for, people that have not only rural experience but a statewide vision, people who have the respect of the state in rural Alaska and have the ability to work in that setting. I could find somebody that in my mind, you know, fits that model but doesn't have the respect of, you know, or, you know, hasn't earned that, and we've got friction right off the bat. So honestly speaking, I've got a few names in mind and that I think could do the job. I will be sitting down with Charles and just saying, you know, any thoughts here? I'm not going to have them vetted, you know, from everybody, but I will be asking Charles if he has ideas that, you know, is there something I don't know? So more than strict qualifications, I think the ability, the perception of these individuals, the attitude of these individuals, and the ability to work collaboratively is going to be key.
Very good. Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. I think it doesn't do any good to have a PhD on the committee if the rural areas don't know that person, don't respect that person, or that person understands their culture.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
Could I just follow up on the question that you asked? You said that you're looking for these people to fill. So we're not talking about people within the department only. Or will there be people from the department that's going to be a part of this team?
Through the chair, I've already made the decision that there will be nobody that is directly accountable to me. So because I think that perception is, you know, we've had the friction of department doing things and coming from Juneau, coming from the state. Anybody that is accountable to me, I don't know how you avoid that perception. Okay. So it won't be anybody in the department, nobody that I'm responsible for.
Right, thanks.
Okay, very good. Senator French.
Just I just want to thank the commissioner for this very collaborative approach. I think you've been sort of gentle on us. The decision sort of comes back over and over and over again to how it's not the Department of Education's job to fund education. It's our legislative job. And so I sort of appreciate you not pointing the finger at us this morning. I've been thinking about our responsibility. We're trying harder, but I just want to say you know, we have to give you the tools to educate our kids with, and the tools are frequently in the form of dollars. And we'll do what we can. I think we're going to do something this morning for you on the Senate floor.
Okay, very good, Senator French. Yes, education is a collaborative process, and we want to work with the administration. I know you want to work with us, and certainly do appreciate the work that Charles Warforth and his folks have done. And so I think this is a great step forward, and look forward to hearing the progress of the committee as you pick the candidates and they start working through the process here. So with that, if there is nothing else to come before the committee, our next meeting is Monday, February 13th, right here, 8 o'clock, and we'll be taking up Senate Bill 194, which is procedures for low performing schools. I thought maybe we would be taking up the VOTEC bill, but in speaking with the co-chairman here, he thinks that will take a long time. So we will not be taking that up Monday, but we'll get proper notice out to everybody on that, and we'll stick to the schedule of and just hear the Senate Bill 194. So if there's no other questions, comments to come before the committee, everybody have a good weekend. We'll see you Monday, Commissioner. Again, thank you.
Thank you.